This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 18th of July 2025. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 18th of July. Reading today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: next attempt to dispose of leisure centre. Council rejects plan to install hideous BT street hubs. And Andrew Trenier leaves Cathedral. So, Nikki, maybe have the story behind the first headline, please.
Which was next attempt to dispose of leisure centre. Campaigners pressing for open-air swimming pool. Winchester civic chiefs are pressing ahead with the potential sale of a disused River Park leisure centre. They are having a second go at finding a new use for the site in Gordon Road. Lib Dem councillors, led by Councillor Martin Todd, on the City Council Cabinet, agree to market the site on a long lease and find the new investor. The Cabinet heard from Lucy Taylor, who has been campaigning for a Lido at the former leisure centre, which has been disused since 2021. She said Lidos are not just about swimming. They are inclusive and help to build community, as well as build mental and physical health. Over 3,000 people signed the petition in 2021, and the website has had over 6,000 clicks. It shows that there is still a demand and that Lidos are making a comeback. Lib Dem councillor John Tippett Cooper was also in favour of the redevelopment, saying, "It's so vital, we look forward now, and this process gives the opportunity for lots of exciting ideas to come forward." The survey shows real support for a Lido and all community leisure facilities. Indeed, if a Lido provider were to come forward with a viable plan, that would be amazing for the site, and it'll be really exciting to see what comes forward. Councillor Martin Todd, council leader, said he was in favour of doing something good for the site and subsequently the community. However, the proposal was met with criticism. Councillor Susan Cook, independent, said, "It beggars belief that the council is now contemplating putting its eggs into the same basket and is considering proposals to market what is called a capital asset for sale on a long lease to another, quotes, investor partner, allocating a budget of £130,000 to undertake this fruitless exercise." Ian Tate, former councillor, also expressed his frustration regarding the length of the process, saying, "The leisure centre looks appalling. We are ashamed of it. Why do we need to run an inadequate public event? Feels like we're going round in circles. Please get on and sort it out." As part of the council's ongoing commitment to resident and investor engagement, they held various forums whereby locals could have their say on the importance of the site. However, it took years to reach a verdict. The building has stood empty since 2021, since the opening of the £40 million leisure centre at Bar End. Its future is uncertain, following the collapse earlier this year of a deal with Southampton University to develop the site and extend its Park Avenue campus.
And the next headline is, Council rejects plans to install hideous BT street hubs. BT's plan to install new street hubs in place of Winchester's telephone boxes has been rejected by the City Council. The telecoms giant proposed to put up the rectangular LED screens in three locations across the city, by the train station, at the University on Romsey Road, and near Waitrose in Stockbridge Road. According to BT, the street hubs would offer the option to install mini mobile masts or small cells to further boost 4G and 5G coverage in the local area. Street-level advertising for businesses, including the local enterprises, would take up less space on the high street than the traditional payphones. But the council had other ideas, refusing the application for the second time. The first was in 2023. The plans were fiercely protested at the time, with a petition gathering over 200 signatures against them, while city councillors branded the hubs hideous and horrendous. 2 years ago, David Mundy of White Beam Close Winchester submitted an objection to the five proposals, and he said, "These are advertising displays, not a street hub, and they are an eyesore as well as a wasteful use of power." And there is a picture, rather blurry one actually, but the street hub is this rectangular black box with blue writing on it, which I presume keeps changing. Yeah, they are ugly.
And our final headline this week, Andrew Trenier leaves Cathedral. One of the figures at the heart of the controversy surrounding Winchester Cathedral has resigned. The former Reverend Canon Andrew Trenier's departure comes almost exactly 1 year after that of Director of Music Andrew Lumsden, who left the cathedral amid accusations of bullying. Former Dean Catherine Ogle also stepped down from her position in April, following the publication of a review into the leadership and governance at the cathedral. The fresh resignation was announced at a service on Sunday, July the 13th, by the interim dean, the Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Ream. He said, "I have a notice to give that I hope you attend to very, very carefully." After 6 years, the Reverend Canon Andrew Trenier has concluded his tenure as Canon Precentor and Sacrist of Winchester Cathedral as of July the 11th, 2025. That is a notice that will be made public, and you are the first to know it, and maybe there will be subsequent statements, but that's all I can say for now. A spokesman for the Cathedral said, "We thank Canon Andy for his contribution to the ministry of Winchester Cathedral and wish him and his family well for the future. We look forward to continuing our work on the development of a thriving, sustainable choral foundation driven by musical excellence. The cathedral is set to advertise for a new dean and a new director of music to replace Mr. Lumsden." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Andrew Trenier. It's very sad to see him go.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters, chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So the death announcements this week. Burroughs. Anthony John Burroughs died peacefully at Brendan Care Medway, aged 96. Clark. Margaret Clark, on the 6th of July, aged 83. Clarkson, Angela Clarkson, on the 24th of June after a long battle with Alzheimer's, aged 92. Dabbs, David Leslie Dabbs, died on the 16th of June, aged 63. Drowning, Stanley Arthur Drowning, died on the 16th of March at St Mary's Hospital on the Isle of Wight, aged 87. Game, Michael Headley Game, died peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home on the 28th of June, aged 93. Happel, Margaret Lachlan Happel, died peacefully on the 28th of June, aged 96. Hemsley, Basil Donovan Hemsley, died peacefully at Mountbatten, Hampshire on the 2nd of July. John, Nicholas John, died peacefully on the 28th of June. Martin, Anne Martin, passed away at home on the 23rd of June, aged 102. Matthews, Brian Matthews, died peacefully on the 24th of June, aged 88. Parker, Ian Douglas Parker, died peacefully on the 2nd of July, aged 77. Reader, Brian Hugh Reader, died at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 30th of June, aged 92. And Raphael, Gary Robert Raphael, died at Winchester Hospice on the 29th of June, aged 79. And now we have Christian Comment, read by Andrew, please.
And this week's Christian Comment is actually the second part of an article written by Nigel Hemming. And the first part was written about a month ago. And it's entitled, Passing It On. We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders. Psalm 78, 4. In my last column, June the 19th, I highlighted the Old Testament's two words for family and how both can have a vital role to play in raising children in faith. Exploring ways that parents can pass on faith to their children, I focused on Ba'ith, which we would think of as the immediate family under one roof. Building on that, Mishpochah is more associated with a wider sense of clan, tribe or community, and this leads me to focus now on the role of the wider church. When instructions are given in Deuteronomy for the passing on of the belief system from one generation to the next, they are written in the context of Mishpochah. Every member of this extended family would recognize their responsibility to communicate the faith of the tribe to the children of the tribe. Today, this remains true in a gathering of multiple generations, united together by a common cause such as the church. A few will teach the young people specifically in volunteer teams, but in truth, every member of the church is communicating their faith to the next generation. Whether or not we are aware of it, all of us are passing on something about our attitudes, our passions, our commitments, the way we worship, serve, communicate, and respond to others, be it positive or less positive. I often remind our worship teams that they will actually be demonstrably leading worship just as much, if not more, on the weeks when they are sitting in the congregation than when they are at the front playing or singing. It's all about role modeling, and I especially want to encourage those of us who do not have kids close by, or at all, that we still have a vital part to play. There are plenty of ways in which we can help our young people grow in faith, life, and emotional literacy. We don't need special skills, just kindness and authenticity. Whatever is really going on, our young people usually notice. Years ago, while reversing out of our drive on a dark, foggy night, my wife accidentally clipped the car of a guest who was having dinner with us. She was mortified and hugely apologetic, but he was completely unfazed and hardly responded at all. After he had gone, my kids observed, "You can tell he's a worship leader by the calm way he reacted." If you are part of a church but don't have kids of your own around, I would encourage you to prayerfully consider how you could intentionally invest in young people, perhaps supporting a family with babysitting help, or volunteering on a kids or youth team, or just by making a point of being friendly and kind. All of us have a part to play in passing on faith to the next generation. And that's part two of an article written by Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor at the Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you got the first. They're quite long, some of these, I think.
I've chosen a shorter one to start with, from Michael Campbell, who's actually a very old friend. So, headed mayoral election. Yin and Ezra does well to remind your leaders of the important changes that the election of the mayor in 2026 will bring to local government, chronicled July the 3rd. I recall the last major change in 1974 occurred with little discussion or understanding by the electorate, which in many cases contributed to a less than ideal outcome, sorry. In the mid-1980s, I served as county councillor for the Medstead and Selborne ward under the leadership of Freddie Emery Wallace. Freddie was an inspiring leader and created a council that led in innovation, forward thinking, and above all, quality of staff. He insisted on appointing the very best candidates for all the senior posts and ones he knew would apply the same high standards to all their teams. He was not afraid to pay over the odds for the chief officers of each department, confident that the return on money spent would be significant, and indeed it was. I sincerely hope that the person chosen as mayor has that strong approach to building a strong, efficient team, rather than luxuriating in the power of the role of mayor and trying to execute roles he, she, is unqualified for. And that's from Michael Campbell, Shoreden, Alton.
Trial by jury. The government's plan to remove juries from trials of offences that carry less than 2 years imprisonment upon conviction and trials of fraud and some sexual offences raises serious concerns about the fairness and the integrity of the criminal justice system, especially when viewed against the backdrop of chronic underfunding at every level. This is a populist attack on the right of a jury, which is the cornerstone of the British justice, providing a critical check on prosecuting authorities and ensuring that the fairest possible outcome for defendants and victims alike. The reason our system of justice has remained unchanged is because, while not perfect, nobody has been able to improve it. Juries, it seems, are now being blamed for cases taking too long. But, as anyone who has spent any time in the Crown Court will know, this is a wholly misplaced notion. Take a look at the reduced number of judges, prosecutors, defence advocates and solicitors. Too few court staff, courtrooms that are not being used because the Ministry of Justice impose arbitrary limits on court sitting days, prison vans not turning up or taking circuitous routes to court, witnesses not being warned, interpreters unavailable, equipment failing, and this morning, a fire alarm going off at 8:10 a.m. in Bournemouth Crown Court, which couldn't be fixed until the engineer arrived at 11 a.m., plus a breakdown of the common platform system, so all hearings are delayed. You couldn't make it up. The overall delay in hearing cases, whether interlocutory hearings, trials or sentences, is unconscionable. And it's getting worse. But it's not because of the juries. There are some 19,000 prisoners kept on remand waiting for something to happen in their cases. Some face trial, not this year, not next, but in 2027, 2028, or even 2029. The preferred course is to restrict trial by jury. Not only will the supposed savings come at the expense of justice, but this proposal will not save time or money. Where are the extra judges, prosecutors, defence lawyers going to come from? How will the system deal with the inevitable increase in appeals? And the suggestion that removing juries might help avoid prejudice is meaningless. Being tried by your peers is the fairest and most democratic process we can provide, where life-changing decisions are being made. Rather than removing juries under the guise of efficiency or complexity, the government should focus on adequately funding the whole criminal justice system to ensure that professional court users are adequately paid and appropriately treated. Courtrooms are open and all parties receive a fair trial. Jury trials have been an essential part of our democracy for centuries. The court's experience is that the jurors, when given clear guidance, have been and remain very capable of understanding complex evidence and able to deliver the correct verdict. Removing juries shifts focus away from the real issue, a justice system starved of resources, leading to an inexorable into the complete breakdown in law and order. And that was from Rose Burns, Hyde, Winchester.
And our next letter is from Danny Lee, who's a councillor for Central Meon Valley. Major shake-up. The biggest shake-up of English local government in 50 years is gathering pace, including plans to reorganise councils in Hampshire and the Solent by 2028. Hampshire currently has three unitary authorities, Hampshire County Council and 11 district councils. The government wants fewer, larger councils for greater, quote, efficiency. Councils must agree the new boundaries by September the 26th. Multiple proposals can be submitted if they cover the whole area. This reorganisation will reshape local services and communities for decades. Winchester, for example, will be merged into a much larger unitary council. It's expected that Hampshire County Council will have chosen its preferred reorganisation option at a July the 18th cabinet meeting, which is likely to include two vast councils with a population of over 655,000 each. The public will have until August the 17th to make comments, and engagement details will be announced. Residents in 11 district and borough councils, which includes Winchester, Southampton, Portsmouth and the Isle of Wight, will have had an opportunity to inform the choice of three alternative options in July via an engagement survey at, and this is an address all in one string, ourplaceourfuture.commonplace.is or email ourplaceourfuture@thinksinsight.com or phone 020-7845-5880. That's 020-7845-5880. Both approaches claim to aim for efficient and future-proof services, but they overlook two vital questions. Is small still beautiful? And will there be an environmental impact assessment? The government's reorganisation criteria and principles don't allow for these tests. Many warn that this shake-up must not sacrifice what local councils do best: democracy, community cohesion, economic development, and care for the environment. The economist, E.F. Schumacher, and his book Small is Beautiful, reminds us that smaller, rooted councils are more responsive and trusted, while bigger units risk detachment and loss of local identity. Efficiency matters, but not at the cost of democracy and resilience. A robust climate and nature assessment must underpin any new council map. Worryingly, no comprehensive carbon, biodiversity or sustainability checks in England have been done for recent reorganisations. If left until after the decisions are made, harm will be built in and costly to fix. Some argue that larger councils could create a simpler, stronger, secure model of public service delivery. This means making services easier to find and use, better integrating services across the tiers of local government and with partner organisations, and better decision-making. Even so, small is beautiful must be more than a slogan. Community and environmental integrity must not be traded away in the quest for process and financial improvements. And that was written in by Danny Lee, the councillor for Central Meon Valley, the Green Group leader of Winchester City Council.
And this is from Nigel Atkinson, who is the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire. an opportunity to remember history. The 15th of July is designated Hampshire Day, with the aim to provide an annual opportunity to remember Hampshire's rich history and how country life has evolved over time, as well as looking forward to the future. It is a day for local people to celebrate their own diverse communities, as well as sharing pride in Hampshire's heritage, culture, natural environment and people. With the 250th anniversary of the birth of Jane Austen, we are proud to welcome visitors from around the world who wish to immerse themselves in the landscapes and settings which inspired one of the best-loved authors in English literature. Whilst we have recently celebrated the 80th anniversary of VE Day, the country continues to face many challenges internationally, economically, and socially. As I travel the country visiting charities, I am constantly surprised and delighted to see the energy, time, and sheer hard work of volunteers to help their communities. The wars around the world have also shown the generosity of spirit in this country as the Ukrainians and others continue to fight for their freedom. In the midst of these most challenging times, people have found new ways, new spaces, and new ideas to come together as a community. I do hope you will join me in celebrating Hampshire Day and raising the Hampshire flag. Hampshire Day gives us the opportunity to thank those who have worked tirelessly to help others in their communities over the last 12 months. The nation could not function without them. Thank you to all. Nigel Atkinson, HM, Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Winchester. And a picture is shown of him holding up said Hampshire flag, which is basically yellow and red with a yellow crown on it and a sort of design that's faintly floral in the yellow part.
Chesil Lodge. There has been some confusion and misinformation circulating recently about the future of the older adults day service at Chesil Lodge in Winchester, so I want to clear things up. To be absolutely clear, there are no plans to close Chesil Lodge or Newman Court in Basingstoke. Hampshire County Council is committed to doing all it can to keep these day services running and making sure they can continue to support local people for years to come. We've listened carefully to the views of people who use the service, their families and staff. Their feedback has helped shape the recommendations that county councillors will scrutinise on July the 16th ahead of the proposals to be considered for a final decision by the council's cabinet on August the 8th. The idea is to bring in a different organisation to run the service at Chesil Lodge and at Newman Court. This would help us reach more people and improve how the service is used. It would also save the county council around £210,000 a year, helping us to keep services going in the way that is affordable. There's also a proposal to bring the cost of attending in line with similar services. People would still only pay what they can afford based on the usual financial assessment used for adult social care. We want Chesil Lodge and Newman Court to stay welcoming, active places for older people in the community, and we are working to make sure that they can do just that. And that was by Councillor Liz Fairhurst, Executive Lead Member for Adult Social Care and Public Health, Hampshire County Council, Winchester.
And this letter is entitled St Cross Fate, and it was written by John Seeger Green, the hospital who lives at the hospital of St Cross. And it actually is something I didn't know. The Chronicle is mistaken. Chronicle July the 3rd, regarding St. Cross Fate. The parish of St. Faith's has nothing to do with the running of the Hospital of St. Cross, the nation's oldest almshouse, although from time to time it is apparent its members imagine that it does. The parish, whose church fell into disrepair and was demolished several centuries ago, is permitted to hold its Sunday services in the hospital chapel, and to run the St. Cross Fete within the hospital, which, despite its name, is a fete to raise funds for the parish, not for the hospital. Further, the hospital has a tradition of long standing that when a member of its community dies, as a token of respect and to symbolise the ending of one life and the starting of another, one of the two gates of the Beaufort Tower is closed. It's closed from the day of the death until the funeral. This is well known to all who frequent the hospital, as is the necessity, if vehicular access is required, of opening that closed gate and closing it again after one has passed through. And this respects both the memory of the deceased and the ancient tradition of the hospital. Brothers do this, as a matter of course, when they bring their cars into the quadrangle to deliver goods to their flats. The funeral took place last Monday of our late and beloved master, Reg Sweet, who had served the hospital as chaplain and then as master over some 21 years, and in whose memory the gate of the Beaufort Tower had been closed. Now, on the Friday before, when the parish was setting up their fete, rather than behaving respectfully and opening and closing the gate as entry was required, officers of the parish decided to disrespect both the traditions of the hospital and the memory of our late master by securing the gate in an open position so that the occasional vehicle could enter. The writer closed the gate three times that day, only to find it held open again. On the third time, at about 3:30 p.m., this resulted in an altercation with the parish officers running the fete, not prepared to honour tradition and respect, because it was, quote, convenient to them that the gate remained open. On Saturday morning, early, when multiple vehicles were entering and leaving the precinct over a short period, it was not unreasonable that the gate should be kept open. However, when the writer left the premises at 12:30, the outer gate to the hospital was half closed to hold back those waiting to enter, with no vehicles entering. But the gate to the Beaufort Tower was again held opened. I know not whether the gate was held open all the time the fete was going on, but I suspect it was. I am appalled that our late master was so disrespected by the parish, for which he did so much work in his lifetime. I am appalled, similarly, that those enjoying the hospitality of the hospital should knowingly and disrespect a former member of the hospital community and wittingly ignore its traditions, attempting to justify their actions because of convenience to themselves. We will have reached a pre-pass when the convenience is allowed to override good manners, appropriate behaviour, respect and tradition. And that's written by John Seeger Green, the Hospital of St. Cross, Winchester.
Thank you. Now we move on to editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Headed, now is the time for City to have a Lido. Or is it a Lido? We think it's a Lido. So here we are, round two of the saga over the future of the River Park Leisure Centre. Following the collapse of the misguided deal with Southampton University, the City Council is again trying to carve out a future for the site. The Chronicle fears that, as is now the tradition in Winchester, the City Council will again get things wrong. It is part of human nature and the DNA of modern-day councillors that they want to do big things. They have wanted to do big things at Silver Hill and Station Approach with a singular lack of success. Now they are turning to the River Park Leisure Centre, and no doubt their ambitions will be similarly lofty. But can the Chronicle make a suggestion, one that will never likely happen? Set aside the era for a Lido and a paddling pool. Nothing would increase the quality of life for thousands in Winchester than the ability to swim in the sunshine. The Lido, at Worthy Lane, now a car park, was replaced in 1974 by the first leisure centre in Gordon Road, which burned down in 1987, to be replaced by the current crumbling building. The argument in the 1970s what that was that the new indoor centre would be much better than the outdoor Lido and river-fed pool just off Garnier Road. There is no doubt the new leisure centre at Bar End is excellent, and the Knowles who decried it have gone noticeably silent. But a Lido is a different beast to an indoor pool. It is not just a place to swim, it is somewhere to meet people and just enjoy the simple but huge pleasure of being outdoors with the sun on your face. It would do wonders for people's mental health. It could be successfully run by a charity or social enterprise, as elsewhere in the UK. There is no shortage of qualified, committed people in Winchester to run the thing. The City Council should get out of its mindset that big is beautiful and create something that would be loved and cherished for generations.
Thank you, Norman. Now you have first person by Colin Aziz, I think.
Yes, and he says, spare us thought for the unseen. It's the 1970s all over again. So say many of my conferees as we contemplate a five-day strike by junior, after the last strike, now resident, doctors, following action by other industrial sectors. Before fingers point or accusations fly, it is worth pausing, not to judge, but to understand. In Hampshire's corridors of healing, from Winchester Royal Hampshire County Hospital to the community surgery in Andover and the major hospitals of Basingstoke and Southampton, many have worked through pandemic chaos, personal sacrifice and brutal rotas. The complaint is not merely about money, though pay is of course central. It's also about dignity, workload and a sense of professional worth. What makes this proposed strike by junior doctors particularly troubling is not its legitimacy, but its timing and scale. According to the British Medical Association, the government's latest offer falls well short of restoring the real terms pay erosion that has occurred since 2008. Estimated that over 25%. Their five-day walkout will be the longest in NHS history. Of course, there will be exemptions, emergency cover will remain, and consultants are likely to step in where they can. But as with any service stretched to its limits, there are inevitable consequences. Spare a thought for the unseen. The cancer patient whose diagnosis is delayed, the parent fretting over a postponed paediatric surgery, the lonely pensioner waiting for a routine scan now weeks behind schedule. These are the people for whom the strike is not a theoretical inconvenience, but a deeply personal disruption. Some will understand, many will not. And then there are those who cannot strike at all, by law or by oath. Members of the armed forces, for instance, are prohibited from walking out. Firefighters, under strict regulation, may strike only under carefully controlled conditions, and even then only after balloting members. Police officers have no rights at all, nor do prison officers. For them, service is not conditional, it's constant. The professions that carries some of the heaviest burdens are those whose voices in protest are most constrained. One could argue that the right to withdraw labour is a cornerstone of democracy. Others might say that while public safety is on the line, such rights must come with limits. So what are the doctors? Are they abandoning their posts or making a stand for the sustainability of the NHS? The answer, I suspect, depends on your views of the government priorities and your proximity to the problem. Ministers insist that money is tight, that budgets are finite, and that recruitment must continue regardless. However, goodwill can be stretched only so far, and stories of how, over time, doctors' conditions have been pared away abound. Hampshire's hospitals have always stood as beacons of care and competence. In recent years, one hears increasing murmurs from within of burnout of doctors emigrating to Australia or New Zealand and of experienced GPs taking early retirement. These are not political slogans. They are lived experiences, and we should listen. Strikes are rarely popular and rarely simple. It's the doctor's process, a selfish act or a desperate one. When those trained to heal feel wounded by the very system they uphold, we must ask not what is wrong with them, but what is wrong with the system. With 1.5 million employees, is the NHS unmanageable? Perhaps it should be broken up. The current dispute will ultimately be resolved by negotiation. Not headlines, not finger-wagging. A mature nation settles disputes not in the court of Twitter opinion or Today programme, but in confidence around a table. Perhaps as we wait in hospital car parks, clutching appointment letters that may soon change, we can find room for both frustrations and empathy. Because in the end, our health service is not just a collection of buildings or policies, it is people. And they too are tired. Meanwhile, stay well.
Thank you, Norma. And now, Andrew, you've got a couple of items from Belgaron, please.
Which is our weekly alternative look at the news. And the first one is entitled An Entrance to Remember. A group of students teamed up and attended their school prom on mobility scooters, making an entrance to remember. While fellow pupils of the John Hanson Community School in Andover arrived at their prom in typical vehicles, this group of Year 11 boys decided to take it the extra half mile. Friday, July the 4th, saw 12 of the students from the school book the scooters from Winchester Mobility and deliver them to the Norton Park Hotel near Sutton Scotney, where they travelled half a mile to the venue. The video of the boys' arrival gained momentum on Winchester Mobility's Facebook page, with 47,000 views and various comments praising their originality. And that's credited Winchester Mobility Facebook. Lee Cogan, owner of Winchester Mobility, said, "I thought it was a fantastic idea, something completely different. It's the first time we've hired mobility scooters out for a prom, and we've had so much positive feedback. I'm sure we'll be doing another one soon. It's been a busy 10 months since we opened, helping so many people who need it, and it's such a rewarding job." Sadie Bryant, parent of Finley Bryant, said, "It was really lovely, and something they will never forget. Just 12 boys loving life." Winchester Mobility is based in Winall, in the industrial estate behind the Beaver Tool Hire on Eastern Lane. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the 12 boys all sitting there on their mobility scooters and, of course, dressed in their suits and shirts and ties. The second article is the public invited to tickle the ivories. A church invited people to play their grand piano as part of a community event. The United Church in Jury Street teamed up with the Hat Fair to let people have a go on the Boston Steinway grand piano that was acquired by the church earlier this year. Around 40 pianists, aged between 4 and over 80, played in the sanctuary, which is decorated with trees from Hillier's nurseries. The United Church plans to hold a series of piano recitals over the next year, and the first is a solo jazz concert with Robert Carter on Saturday, July the 12th at 7:30 p.m. and tickets can be bought in advance or on the day. And that article is accompanied by a couple of people playing this rather grand, if you pardon the pun, this rather grand Boston Steinway grand piano.
Thank you. Now we have the this week's announcements. We start with what's on. Firstly, there is a walking fest in honour of the 250th anniversary of Jane Austen's birth. and Winchester Ramblers have organised a series of free walks to mark the event. The walks will take place between August the 2nd and August the 9th in areas which would have been familiar to Jane Austen. They're probably without the traffic. Steventon, Chawton and Winchester are the focus of the walks, and for more information you can visit the Winchester Ramblers website. Twyford Village Fete takes place on Saturday, August the 16th at Stanlake Meadow. There are lots of stalls and community events, and it starts at 1 p.m. and closes at 5 p.m. The Watercress Line has a new exclusive wine tasting event that pairs wine tasting with a ride on a steam train. Wine experts will share insights into the wine characteristics during the journey, and the tastings of five different wines are accompanied by delectable food. There are two dates for these special events: Saturday the 26th of July and Saturday the 20th of September, and they leave Alresford at 6 p.m. Tickets can be obtained from the Watercress Line website. And a date for the diary in October for you. The Twyford Waterworks is having a public open day on Sunday, October the 6th. There'll be working Edwardian pumps, plus, of course, the renowned tea room for cakes and light refreshments. Lighting up time ends Friday the 18th of July at 5:11 a.m. and begins at 9:11 p.m. On Wednesday the 23rd of July, it ends at 5:17 a.m. and begins at 9:05 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki, please.
Here we go. Hosepipe ban. A hosepipe ban is set to be enforced in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Southern Water has announced it will be enforcing a temporary use ban, or TUB, T-U-B, in the county and island from 9 a.m. on Monday, July the 21st, to, quotes, protect our environment and keep taps running through the hot summer. Managing Director Tim McMahon said, "We're sorry we're taking this step, but as other water companies have already done, we have to respond to the widespread and prolonged dry weather affecting our region. Only by working together can we make sure there's enough water to go round for customers and the environment. Thank you for your support." Justifying the ban, the company said the rivers Test and Itchen are critically low levels, down 24% on normal flows for this time of year. It also noted that the Environment Agency declared the Solent and South Downs to be in, quotes, prolonged dry weather. The company said in its press statement, "We're asking for the help of our communities to no longer use hosepipes for activities like watering gardens, filling paddling pools or washing cars. By doing this, alongside our ongoing round-the-clock work to reduce leaks and optimise our water supply works, reservoirs and underground pipelines, we can work together to make a big difference. Visit the Southern Water website for a postcode checker to see if this affects you, and a list of exemptions and water-saving tips."
Fite continues to keep daycare centre open. People fear they may have to put their loved ones into a care home if daycare centres is closed in Hampshire County Council. On Saturday, July the 12th at 10:30 a.m, a large group of campaigners gathered outside Hampshire County Council's offices to protest against the County Council's planned closure of Chesil Lodge Day Centre. The centre, located in Chesil Street, provides essential care services for older adults, including those with dementia and long-term health conditions. It also offers crucial respite for family carers. The protest was attended by residents, people who either attend or the care centre or have family member who does, and the Liberal Democrat MP for Winchester, Danny Chambers. The idea of the protest and to fight against the council came from a recently elected county councillor for Eastgate, Paula Ferguson, who represents the division where Chesil Lodge is located. Campaigners say that without this support, carers may become overwhelmed, potentially forcing loved ones into residential care, which could cost the county council further. Councillor Ferguson said, "We do not want Chesil Lodge Day Centre to close. This is so important because it's one of the only two centres that the council runs across this county. The county council argues that closing Chesil Lodge is only a small cut, but for the families who depend on it, the impact will be devastating. It is simply wrong to try and balance the books on the backs of the most vulnerable." Danny Chambers, MP, said the NHS have hundreds of people in our hospitals that are ready to leave, but there is no care place for them to go to. We need to save the adult care social services and to save the NHS. It also costs more to keep these people in hospital than it does to put them in a care centre. So every pound you spend on social care is £3 saved for the NHS. All proposals will be considered at the County Council's Cabinet meeting on Friday the 18th of July. To sign the petition, visit winld.org.uk/Chesil-Lodge. Hasn't got the rest of it, actually. But there is, seeing as it's today that they're having the meeting, it's probably a bit late. There are a couple of pictures. The first one is a group of mature people with notices saying, "Care for carers and save Chesil Lodge Daycare Centre. Social care matters." Care for the carer. And below that is a picture that's with a big banner in purple that says, "No ifs, no buts, no Chesil Lodge cuts."
Helping to stop loneliness among elderly people. This year, Age Concern Hampshire is proud to celebrate 40 years of supporting older people across the county. Since 1985, we've worked hard to help older people live well, stay independent, and feel connected, no matter their circumstances. We are committed to continually adapting and growing to support the changing needs of older people in our community. Over the years, our services have grown to include care and well-being centres, help at home, foot care clinics, social groups, hospital home support, and free information hubs. Everything we do is powered by an incredible team of staff and volunteers who generously give their time, energy, and compassion to help make life better for others. To mark this milestone, we've launched a crowdfunding campaign to help sustain our social groups, which are vital for those at risk of loneliness or isolation. These groups, which have become an essential part of life for many older people, are under threat due to the end of previous funding streams. Rather than introducing participation fees, which many older people would not be able to afford, Age Concern Hampshire is appealing to the public for much-needed financial support. We know that loneliness and social isolation can lead to depression and anxiety, and that's why our social groups are so important. Those who attend also benefit from gentle physical activity and structured sessions, all supported by our trained team of staff and volunteers in a warm, friendly, and welcoming environment. Funds raised will be used to cover the coordination and delivery of these groups. Keeping these sessions free at the point of access remains central to Age Concern Hampshire's mission of inclusivity and sustained support. We're inviting you to help us celebrate this milestone year by making sure that no older person in Hampshire is left without connection, purpose, or support. If you're able to, please consider donating through our link. If you'd like to find out more about our services or have questions, please feel free to call us on 01962 868 545. That's 01962 868 545. And our friendly team is always ready to assist, provide information, and offer support. And this is accompanied by a photograph of in one of these sessions, I suppose, which Age Concern Hampshire is running. And everybody looks quite involved, which is good.
Winchester to twin with city in Ukraine. Winchester is to twin with a city in Ukraine. A meeting of the city council endorsed the agreement, which will be officially signed by the mayor, Sudhakar Achwal, in a ceremony later this year. Nizhyn, spelt N-I-Z-H-Y-N, is a historic city in the Chernihiv region along the Oster River in the north of the country near Kyiv. It has a population of around 72,000 and is home to over 300 historical buildings, 70 of which are of significant cultural and historic value. Its university, which was established in 1805, is one of the oldest in Ukraine. This is the first time Winchester has signed a twinning agreement with any place outside the EU. In the past, it has been twinned with Versailles and Lyon in France, Gießen in Germany, and Kerkrade in the Netherlands. The agreement was supported by councillors John Tippett Cooper and Kathleen Becker. An amendment to extend the agreement from the city of Winchester to the wider district was put forward by council leader Martin Todd, and seconded by Tory group leader Councillor Caroline Horrell. At the meeting on Wednesday the 9th of July, Council watched a video message from Oleksandra Kodola, Mayor of Nizhyn City, and enjoyed a performance by the Kalina Choir, spelled K-A-L-Y-N-A, which was formed by members of the local Ukrainian community. Also in attendance were members of Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association, the WUCA. Winchester City Council has an ongoing commitment to welcoming Ukrainians seek a safe place due to the current crisis in the country. Proposing the agreement, Councillor Tippett Cooper said, "This twinning proposal is a natural evolution of our journey and deepening of the ties we have already built with Ukraine, allowing us to foster exchange between schools, artists, civic leaders, and volunteers." The mayor, Sudhakar Achwal, said, "The Winchester district has a strong and special connection with Ukraine. A significant number of Ukrainians currently call the district home, and they are active, valued members of our local community." And there's a wonderful photograph of the Winchester Ukrainians, all the women, presumably, because they ain't got no men in the picture, and the Kalina Choir, who have the most wonderful floral headdresses, and there are four of them, so I presume that is what the choir consists of.
Rare animal seen after absence of decades. Pine martens have been thriving in the New Forest after being absent from the national park for decades. Once widespread across the UK, pine martin populations were left devastated due to habitat loss and persecution, which left only a small amount, mostly in northern England, Scotland and parts of Wales. In 2024, a three-year study of weasel-like species revealed that the population had returned to the New Forest after decades, and the Daily Echo Camera Club member Trev Stad managed to capture some amazing pine martin pictures in Ashurst near Tottenham. A spokesperson for the Hampshire Wildlife Trust said, "It prefers woodland habitats, climbing very well and living in tree holes, old squirrel drays or even old birds' nests. During the summer mating season, they make shrill cat-like calls, and the following spring, the female will have a litter of between 1 to 5 kits, which are independent by autumn. That's a nice cheering piece of news.
Praise for Year 8 pupils after a learning programme. A group of pupils have completed a programme designed to give them a taste of university-level learning. Year 8 students from the Henry Beaufort School in Winchester took part in the Brilliant Club Scholars programme, which included 7 university-style tutorials led by a PhD tutor. The programme, run in partnership with the University of Southampton, helps young people explore higher education while building key skills to support their future learning. A spokesman for the school said, "Since Christmas, our Year 8 students have taken part in a series of 7 university-style tutorials delivered in school by a PhD tutor. The tutorials are based on the tutor's area of research expertise. Students had the opportunity to explore an inspiring supercurricular topic while developing key academic skills that support their attainment across the curriculum. Our focus this year was literary theory. Students were tasked with researching different literary theories, including Marxist, feminism, eco-critical, and post-colonial, and learned how to analyze text through the lens of these different literary theories. They then had to write a final assignment of 1,500 to 2,000 words. In writing their assignments, students demonstrated their subject knowledge and research skills alongside the written communication and critical thinking skills developed throughout the program. The pupils attended a graduation ceremony at the University of Southampton, where they received certificates and toured the campus. Feedback from the PhD tutor praised the quality of the students' work. And the tutor said, "Arguments are carefully and astutely articulated throughout the essay. This is high-level thinking that you pull off with flair. Some of your observations are very sophisticated and insightful." The school described the day as a great day and said students should be very proud of their achievements. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the set of students from the Henry Beaufort School, and they're all a member of the Brilliant Club Scholars Programme.
Gang leader ordered to pay £45,000 of illegal profits. A Hampshire gang leader behind a multi-million pound drugs operation has been forced to pay back more than £45,000 in criminal profits. Lewis Edwards, 46, from Hampshire, was jailed for more than 18 years in September 23 after admitting to conspiring to supply cocaine and transfer criminal property. His offences were part of a large-scale drugs operation in Portsmouth and surrounding areas between March 2018 and May 2020. Members of Edwards' gang transported drugs and cash, with police seizing around £300,000 in cash and more than 70 kilos of cocaine valued at more than £7 million and more than 20 kilos of amphetamine during their investigation. Edwards used encrypted mobile phones and the EncroChat platform to order cocaine in April and May 2020. He fled to Spain in October 2020, but was located in Benidorm in June 2022 and extradited to the UK. Before leaving the UK, Edwards spent his criminal earnings on a new car, designer goods, and a holiday in Dubai. He was sentenced alongside 12 other gang members, with the group receiving a combined total of 76 years in prison. A proceeds of crime hearing at Winchester Crown Court on July the 8th found that Edwards had benefited from his crimes by nearly £2.9 million. However, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary Financial Investigation Unit determined he currently had £45,801 in assets, including £713 in cash, £5,088 in designer items, and £40,000 in equity.
Cancer spotted during optician's appointment. A routine eye appointment led to the discovery of a rare cancer for a Hampshire woman. Lindsay Shulkins, 43, first noticed blurry vision in her right eye in January and initially dismissed it as a hazy eye from sleep. When the blurring persisted and she began losing peripheral vision, she booked an eye test at Specsavers in Alton. She said, during the test, they were asking me to read letters and I just couldn't see them. And then I couldn't even see the screen. Trainee optician Sunny Hassan conducted the examination and recommended an optical coherence tomography, OCT scan, which revealed an abnormality. Lindsay said, if Sonny hadn't have spotted it and flagged it to his supervisor, things could have been a lot worse. Ocular melanomas can be incredibly fast-acting and aggressive cancers, which can easily spread to other parts of the body if not spotted early on. It's been a life-changing experience, but at least I still have a life to change. I still get to see my children grow up and my children still get to have their mum. The Alton resident was urgently referred to hospital and later sent to Moorfields Eye Hospital in London, where specialists diagnosed a significant-sized melanoma in her right eye. Doctors determined that the only viable treatment was full removal of the eye. Lindsay underwent surgery in March and is now recovering and adapting to life after surgery. Tracy Reeves, store manager at Specsavers Alton, said, we are delighted to hear that Lindsay is on the road to recovery after being diagnosed with such a rare eye cancer. The team at Alton has kept in touch with Lindsay following the news of her diagnosis, and we wish her and her family all the best for the future. Lindsay lives with her husband Mike and their two children, Casper 13 and Annabelle 6. She said, it was very scary for my children. Annabelle was worried about her mum being in the hospital, and Casper was quite upset when he found out it was cancer. But we've had a lot of support from friends, my work, and the team at Specsavers Alton. Once they heard about my diagnosis, they sent me a big bunch of flowers and have stayed in touch with me ever since. And there's a picture of Sunny Hassan, Lindsay Shulkins and Trace Reeves outside Specsavers in Alton. I suppose one ought to say there are other facilities for eye tests.
Cricketing history for Winchester Village Club. Sparsholt is on the verge of making cricket history as they host the first ever England-Australia over-60s international to be staged in Hampshire. Dubbed the Grey Ashes, Sparsholt stages the fourth of five one-day games, and results so far have shared it couldn't be closer. The Hampshire Seniors County Club, which selected Sparsholt as the venue, has been a key part of over-50s, 60s and 70s cricket nationally, which is expanding rapidly. Hampshire are one of 34 counties playing competitive every week of the summer season. Many counties run four teams, and that's close to 2,000 active players. At the elite level, the standard is high. A smattering of former pros are playing, and very many former top-level club players. As Pete Green, Hampshire County Seniors Chairman, points out, we're always looking for more players. There are many levels, so if you're playing as a 60-plus, come and say hi. But we don't believe anyone is ever permanently retired either, and can't return to the sport they've loved all their lives. Every ball is played to win, and good shots celebrated by both sides too. He added, that sounds like old-fashioned stuff perhaps, but if relatively old bones want one last hurrah, it's also great to know matches are played on great grounds and they're fun. But this international, along with the second one against the USA next month, is the cherry on the cake. For Sparsholt chairman Andy Worth, being selected for such a prestigious international is a mark of our commitment to all ages of the game, from a thriving boys and girls junior section through the adult league systems and on to hosting seniors too. following our wicket being ranked the best in the Southern League last year. This is a fitting reward for the ground staff and all at the club. We can't wait to welcome England and Australia and welcome everyone who'd like to come along to see the game. It's free to get in and we'd love to see you. And the match is on Tuesday, July the 21st, noon start at Sparsholt Cricket Club, Locks Road, Sparsholt. And that's accompanied by a photograph of the two captains, the England and the Australian team, and the umpire standing there on a glorious sunny afternoon.
Aspiring Paralympic athlete appeal. A former Winchester University student is raising funds to help with his dream of competing in the Paralympics. Ben Morris, 24, from Swindon, is raising the funds needed to train in the sport of bocce, a Paralympic sport introduced to the Games in 1984. Ben was diagnosed with spinal muscular atrophy type 2 at just 11 months old. It's a condition that means the messages from his brain don't reach his muscles properly, and he uses a wheelchair controlled with just his index finger. As a teenager, Ben was being coached by the talent development team at Bocce, England, but as his condition worsened in his teens, he gave up, claiming he'd lost interest, something he now regrets. If I'd had to change the way I play, it would have meant admitting I was getting weaker. He decided to focus instead on getting a degree in journalism from Winchester University and did work experience at the Chronicle. He achieved his degree in 2022 and was accepted onto the BBC's prestigious Journalism Apprenticeship Programme, where he still works today. Inspired by the Paris Games and wishing he was there, Ben is now ready to take up the sport again. He's raising funds to help buy the equipment he needs to train, including a ramp, mouth pointer, and magnetic ball holder to allow him to play again. Ben said, "I appreciate every penny that gets donated. The thing about adaptive equipment is that it's so expensive." You can donate directly to SMA UK at, all lowercase, smauk.org.uk/donate.
Helping physio students with careers. A new placement programme is helping students make a real-world impact early in their studies. First-year physiotherapy students from the University of Winchester have completed a 60-hour scheme with organisations across the South, including in Hampshire. 80 students took part in a 10-week programme, which began in January and included placements with charities and organisations supporting individuals with care needs. The scheme is part of a newly revalidated curriculum designed to build professionalism and communication skills through practical experience, even outside the traditional clinical settings. Dr. Catherine Cook, physiotherapy program lead, said, "We are grateful to all of you for throwing yourselves into this alongside a busy study program. You've been a phenomenal year group." A thank you event was held at the University West Downs Auditorium to celebrate the students' contributions and to recognise the support of placement partners. And there is a picture of six of the students alongside Stuart Palmer from the BOAS. They all look very pleased with themselves and very young.
Emergency response app. A new emergency response app is aiming to help save lives by speeding up care for cardiac arrest patients. The South Central Ambulance Service, SCAS, and the Isle of Wight Ambulance Service, IWAS, have partnered with the Good Sam Responder app to reduce response times for life-threatening cardiac arrest calls. The first phase of the service went live on Thursday, June the 19th. David Hammer, operations manager for SCAS, said, "The launch of GoodSam is a significant milestone in our mission to improve survival from cardiac arrest. By enabling trained responders to reach patients faster, we can dramatically increase the chances of a positive outcome. This is about saving lives, and we are proud to be part of this initiative. The Good Sam app, which stands for Good Smartphone Activated Medics, uses GPS technology to alert verified volunteers within a 500 meters of a cardiac arrest incident. These responders can begin CPR before the arrival of an ambulance, providing life-saving care during the most critical minutes. Every minute without intervention reduces the chance of survival by up to 10%. Currently, certified healthcare professionals and clinically trained individuals can register with the app, which plans to expand to trained public volunteers in the autumn. The partnership combines technology, charitable support, and frontline expertise to improve survival rates for out-of-hospital cardiac arrests.
A new restaurant to tickle the taste buds. A South Asian-inspired restaurant with a twist has now opened on Parchment Street in Winchester. Well-known local restaurant owner Shah Abdul, 40, launched his new business venture on Monday, June the 23rd, and has already been met with unwavering support from local fans. Kushi Coconut, offering its own personal take on Indian Bangladeshi cuisine, serves fresh and homemade food using locally sourced produce. The menu is extensive, offering a variety of dishes, many of which are authentic family recipes made by Shah's wife, Tiba Shahid. Head chef Mo was recruited out of retirement to help the restaurant set up. With 40 years of experience, Mo has even cooked for the big names like the Hairy Bikers. Shah said, "Once we get our alcohol license, we want it to be a fun and relaxing place to take family and friends and to make memorable moments. I know my potential and I know that I'm an entrepreneur. I've made so many chances and I've made my own chances, so I wasn't afraid to give it a shot." Customer John Gibney, 47, said, "I think Shah is such a perfectionist in terms of the quality and standard of his food. The fact that he's passionate and loves food shows." Open from Tuesday to Sunday, Kushi Coconut also offers in-house collection with 15% off. Or from Friday, June the 26th, food will be available through the food delivery app Deliveroo. For bookings or in-house collection, call 01962 671 885. And there's a lovely photograph of a beaming Shah Abdul and head chef Mo outside Kushi Coconut, and lots of bamboo and vegetation making it all rather look tropical.
Going with the flow and reconnecting with nature. A new sculpture trail is inviting visitors to slow down and reconnect with nature through art. Horton Lodge Gardens near Stockbridge has unveiled Fuvi, a sculpture exhibition running until September the 30th that explores a theme of flow in both nature and creativity. The title Fluvi comes from the Latin word for flow, and the exhibition features more than 50 original works by 16 artists displayed throughout the 15-acre site. The concept for Fluvi was developed collaboratively by exhibition curator Sarah Rankins, Houghton Lodge owner Sophie Busk and stone carver Zoe Wilson. Sarah said, "We are excited by the possibility of working closely with a group of artists. Curating a show of sculptures that could speak to one another in this serene contemplative setting was a captivating idea." Many of the participating artists trained at the City and Guilds of London Art School. Each piece has been created in response to the landscape and the character of the gardens. Excuse me. Each piece has been created... Oh, sorry, I've done that bit. The exhibition transforms familiar areas of Horton Lodge Gardens with bronze and steel sculptures nestled among plants in the walled garden. The conservatory serves as an indoor gallery lit with natural light and filled with hand-carved stone, porcelain and prints. In the Oriental Garden, sculptures reflect the tranquil setting and the artistic interpretation of the space. The works explore the dual meanings of flow, with some echoing movements and rhythm of water, while others capture the focused, changing flow of creative process. The exhibition brings together stone, clay, metal and mixed media works, ranging from small contemplative pieces to large dramatic statements. All artworks are available for purchase, with prices from £100 to £18,000. Visitors can explore the gardens and sculptors daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The Glasshouse Tea Room is open throughout the exhibition, offering light lunches, cream teas and homemade cakes. Dogs on short leads are welcome. More information is available at hortonlodge.co.uk. The exhibition aims to offer the peaceful cultural experience blending art and nature to help visitors slow down and see the world differently. The organisers hope that guests will leave feeling refreshed and inspired by the beauty and serenity of the settings. And what actually crossed my mind, that I wonder if visually impaired people are actually allowed to touch and feel the sculptures. It'd be interesting to find that out.
Poulton's Park using renewable solar power. A Hampshire theme park is running one of its largest areas on mainly solar power. Poulton's Park in the New Forest National Park has used this solar energy to power 84% of its largest theme area, Tornado Springs. The park has generated 357 megawatt hours of solar power since March. The theme park invested £1.5 million in solar installations, including carports and roof panels on 11 buildings, which became operational in March 2025. The use of solar power has saved 68 tons of carbon dioxide emissions, which is equivalent to planting more than 4,000 trees. Marketing and Technology Director Lawrence Mansey said, "As a third generation business, we're committed to making tangible efforts to lower our environmental impact and do our bit to leave our planet in a better place than we found it. We're proud to be leading the way in solar energy within the UK theme park industry. We can already generate 35% of the park's entire electricity usage through on-site renewable energy. And the park's solar infrastructure is backed up by a 430 kilowatt battery energy storage system, allowing it to utilise energy collected during daylight hours, even after nightfall. And Poulton's Park is home to Peppa Pig World, and it has plans to generate at least half of its energy on site."
New necklace launched to mark 25 years in business. A jewellery designer has launched a new necklace for her pearl business 25th anniversary. Claudia Bradby, based in Winchester, has released a limited edition piece to mark 25 years in the industry, reimagining her original pearl and cord necklace, first created in 2000. The new design features coin pearls from her personal archive, hand knotted on a simple cord, and was launched on Sunday, June the 15th. Selling out in the first week, resulting in a restock, it has become a limited piece as Claudia only has enough pearls to make a further 40 necklaces. Claudia said matching cord to pearls felt radically different 25 years ago. It gave pearls a whole new spirit, relaxed, grounded and a little rebellious. I've always associated that mood with the sea, with freedom. This anniversary necklace is my tribute to the original vision and to all the women who've joined our community over the years. Ms. Bradby launched her business in 2000 while living in Hong Kong, where she designed her first piece. Her brand soon became known for its fresh approach to pearls, attracting a loyal following among celebrities and public figures. Dame Helen Mirren, Sam Smith, Claire Balding, and Olympian Helen Glover are among her fans. The Princess of Wales is also known to have commissioned jewellery from Ms. Bradby during her time at the fashion retailer Jigsaw. The anniversary necklace stays true to the brand's signature style, combining a relaxed bohemian feel with everyday wearability. Ms. Bradby is founder of Claudia Bradby Pearls, a British brand specialising in modern freshwater pearl jewellery, freshwater. Her business has defined the pearl category, introducing contemporary designs that appeal to a new generation of jewellery lovers. The 25th anniversary necklace is priced at £95 and is available through the Claudia Bradbury website and selected stockists.
School's 50 years at current site. A Winchester primary school is gearing up to celebrate 50 years at its current site. Western C of E Primary School will be hosting a special event to mark the half-century milestone at its Browning Drive location in Fulford on Friday, September the 26th. The event, which will run from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m, will welcome former staff members and pupils to celebrate the school's history and contribution to the community. The school, which moved to its present location in 1975, has been a key part of the local area ever since. The school said the event is the perfect chance to celebrate five decades of learning, laughter and community spirit. The event will feature guided tours of the school and grounds, a display of archive photographs and memorabilia and refreshments. Visitors will have the chance to mingle with old friends and familiar faces and share memories. There will also be a special commemorative ceremony. Peter Burbage, head teacher, said, "This is a momentous occasion for our school. We are incredibly proud of our heritage and want to celebrate the role of Western CE Primary has played in so many lives."
Girls' school set for major development. A Winchester girls' school is embarking on a significant development of its sports facilities. St Swithin says the work will inspire more girls to get active. At present, up to 25% of PE lessons are affected by poor weather. And to tackle this, the school plans to construct indoor courts, ensuring more predictability in curriculum sports. The project will be carried out in two phases. The first phase will see the construction of a tensile roof over four tennis and three netball courts, which will be relocated from their existing positions. A strength and conditioning suite, changing facilities, and a spectator gallery will also be built. The first phase will also see improved parking facilities next to the swimming pool building, with EV charging points, and a new direct entrance to the car park from Arlesford Road. Phase 2 will see the construction of a new sports complex adjoining the swimming pool building, and this will include a fitness suite, flexible studio spaces with a dance studio, a cafe, and new changing facilities. Planning permission for the first phase has already been granted, and building work will begin over the upcoming summer holidays, with completion due in summer 2026.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for their selection and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vinson, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.